day is in a crucial stage. It's not because of foreign wars we wage. It's more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned UN. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Dangerous ones will not turn in their guns. All the unions always ask for more. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damned.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. This is a special broadcast. We don't normally do things on Monday, but it is September 11th, 2017. It is 16 years since the attack on the World Trade Center that brought down the Twin Towers along with a few other towers. It's also 5 years since the attack on the consulate in Benghazi in Libya. It's a day that we need to take a little time and remember. We need to remember what happened. We need to remember what the consequences of what happened are. And we need to never forget who was responsible, who was supposed to be responsible, and who has not yet been held responsible. At the end of the day, which it is almost the end of the day, as it's a little after 10 p.m. Eastern time here, as I had this opportunity to broadcast, at the end of the day, it is not really about pointing fingers anymore, although there's still a lot of answers that need to be made public, and there's still a lot of people who should be held accountable for their actions who have yet to be. The ideas and the notions of justice are often clouded with the ideas and the notions of vengeance. And it gets swirled up and confused yet even further when we face the very real reality of the world that we live in at this particular moment in time, that being the world of political correctness. Political correctness is affecting not just us here in the United States, but everyone throughout the Western civilization. In fact, I read an article today involving teachers in the United Kingdom. In fact, UK teachers are literally too scared to teach about September 11th and the terror attacks that occurred that day. And I'm serious. Today, on the anniversary of September 11th, 2001, the anniversary of the terror attacks here in the United States, parents across the country are telling their children what happened on that day 16 years ago, or at least some of us are. But the same thing isn't happening everywhere in the world. Some places are just too politically correct to say the truth, that radical Islamic attacks that radical Islamists attacked the world, not just New York City, not just the United States, but the world. That's why the World Trade Center was the target, because the entire world was supposed to stand up and take notice. Anyone and everyone who isn't like the terrorist were the target. More than 60 countries had citizens who died in the attacks on the trade centers. The United Kingdom lost 67 citizens that day. But some UK teachers are simply too terrified to teach their students about the attacks because they fear a backlash from Muslim parents. This, according to a leading expert in counter-extremism education. And he made this statement to The Telegraph. We're looking at Hami Hanif, OBE, who was appointed by the government to turn around three schools at the heart of the Trojan horse scandal. And he said that some teachers have a misplaced concern that they will cause offense if they raise 9/11 in the classroom. He said that some teachers, particularly those who work in schools with a high proportion of Muslim students, see it as a contentious topic and shy away from teaching it. Quote, teachers sometimes have fear that this might be controversial, he said. They think if we teach about this, we might get Muslim parents objecting. Mr. Hanif, who is executive principal of Waverly Education Foundation, has advised the Department of Education on combating counter-extremism in schools. And he said that such views are misguided. There is a fear among the teachers, but it is not really grounded in anything. It's based on their stereotypical view of the of a community as opposed to the reality. It is very misplaced. It is an assumption. 16 years ago, 2,958 people were murdered by Islamic terrorists. More British citizens died that day than in any other terrorist attack. You would think that would be something that at least the British teachers would honestly believe that young British citizens should be taught, and something that they should never forget. But you see, the problem here isn't really that they're afraid of offending parents. They're afraid of offending Muslims. They're afraid of what the possible retributions could be. And guess what those possible retributions might be? The truth might be revealed. It is a tragedy that educators in any Western nation would be afraid to teach the truth in their classrooms. However, these so-called progressives have gotten such a firm grip on what passes for public education. It's not at all a surprise that political correctness once again is put ahead of preparing students for the real world. It's not at all a surprise that indoctrination and tolerance and acceptance and buying into the big lie is put ahead of teaching the truth. The attack on the Twin Towers, the attack on the World Trade Center, the attack that was perpetrated by Islamic terrorists, make no mistake about it, it was an attack on the entirety of the world. They wanted to black the eye of the greatest power on the planet as far as what the Middle Eastern cultures believed, and that is the big Satan, that is America, the United States of America, and to any of you other nations silly enough to be our allies, silly enough to be our friends, you too are an enemy. You're an enemy to those who wish to destroy you. And those are the only people who would be offended by teaching the truth. Young Muslims should be taught the truth. In every possible opportunity you get, they should be taught the truth. They should be taught the truth that to follow the ways of Muhammad is to follow the ways of an illiterate pedophile who was genocidal. To become a Mohammedan is not the same as just being a Muslim. You know, I know we have a lot of conversations along the way, and it's really difficult for some people to wrap their mind around the fact that when I call out Islam, I'm not attacking individual Muslims. However, Muslims that want to protect Islam and spread Islam and bring Sharia around the world, they typically know exactly what they're doing. And they typically know that they are lying about the tenets of Islam. And they typically know that they are lying about the dangers that Sharia brings to the table when it comes to people who believe in, embrace, love, and wish to enjoy the blessings of personal, individual liberty, because they don't exist under Islam. But the very fact that you have teachers afraid to teach it. You know, and the sad part is I don't know if that's true or if that's just an excuse. It's hard to say. Maybe it is just an excuse. Maybe it's the truth. Maybe they really are just afraid. I don't know. But either way, no one, not anyone in the United States, not anyone in the UK, not anyone in Canada, not anyone in Germany, not anyone in France, not anyone in Sweden, not anyone any place around the world who was meant to be a target on that day should ever hear that a teacher in any of their classrooms is afraid to teach the truth about September 11th, 2001. But here on the 16th anniversary of 9/11, it is time for us to remember the lessons that we should have learned and that we have evidently, apparently, as far as I can tell, for the most part, have unlearned. On that horrific day, on a bright, sunshine-riddled morning, Islamic terrorists flew two passenger airplanes into the World Trade Center towers, collapsing them both and murdering nearly 3,000 Americans. They flew another passenger airline into the Pentagon and were only prevented from flying a fourth into the White House or the Capitol by the bravery of passengers on board that plane who forced the crash of the flight into a field in Pennsylvania. Not special people, not military, not police, not trained soldiers, civilians. Now, some of these people had experience, but for the most part, this was the courage of average, everyday people that were on that plane. They knew these people were up to no good. They knew something bad was going to happen, and they knew most likely they were going to die no matter what happened. So they decided to stand up, and they decided to make sure that if they were going to die, they were going to die protecting other people, and they did that. God for those people and their courage, and I hope that their souls have been blessed and protected in the afterlife, and I hope the families of those people are still watched over and protected. Now, America responded with the full brunt of her wrath. For a brief moment in time, we were united against a common enemy. We reduced Afghanistan's ruling regime to powerlessness, then turned and reduced the Saddam Hussein regime to smoldering ash. We increased bureaucracy and security at our airports. We poured money into building our military. Some of this was necessary. Some of it wasn't. some of it was useless and still complained about today because some of it has not went away. But we poured money into building our military. We knew one thing, no matter what else we did, we wouldn't allow ourselves to be hit again. We wouldn't be caught asleep at the wheel again. We had learned our lessons, oh yes, and we had learned them so well. But now those lessons have been largely forgotten, if remembered at all. What are some of the lessons I'm talking about? Well, let's take a look at about five very important ones. Number one, global retreat is not a strategy. The Clinton administration's foreign policy of quasi-isolationism combined with occasional human rights-driven interventionism, well, that was a formula for failure. After Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda bombed the American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, the United States did virtually nothing. Again, the U.S. did virtually nothing after bin Laden bombed the USS Cole. Bin Laden saw the United States as a paper tiger, and why not? That's what we were at the time. With Bill Clinton at the helm, there was no desire to stop violence around the world. There was no desire to stop terrorism, only a desire to try and promote cash, prestige, and prominence and power into the hands of the Clinton family. So bin Laden, seeing the United States as a paper tiger, that prompted him to strike, thinking that he could get away with it. And why not? Because he had been getting away with it. The Bush administration's aggressive response, however, took al-Qaeda by surprise. According to James Mitchell, the man who questioned al-Qaeda mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM stated, quote, "How was I supposed to know that cowboy George Bush would announce he wanted us dead or alive and then invade Afghanistan to hunt us down?" This is what Mitchell wrote, quote, "KSM explained that if the United States had treated 9/11 like a law enforcement matter, he would have had time to launch a second wave of attacks. But the blowback from the Iraq war led the Obama administration to imitate the foreign policy of the Clinton administration in a lot of ways. And this, of course, has led the Trump administration to do the same, at least so far. Another lesson that would be really important for us to continue to remember is that money doesn't buy off Islamists. And neither does friendliness. We can pretend to be friendly all day long, and we can try and bribe these people all we want, but at the end of the day, that does not gain allegiance, because the only allegiance that Islamists have, the only allegiance that Mohammedans have, is to the tenets of Islam, to Sharia law, to the teachings of Mohammed, to the belief that Allah wants them to kill all infidels, convert them or kill them. Be prepared to kill yourself in the process and you'll be rewarded. That's what we're dealing with, and money doesn't affect that. For a decade, the Clinton administration reached out to the Palestinian government with cash, put pressure on our ally Israel, and symbolic moves to legitimize the regime. The response on 9/11, the Palestinians literally danced in the streets and celebrated as Americans leapt to their death from burning buildings trying to escape the terror that was the Twin Towers before they completely collapsed. One of the great myths purveyed by bin Laden was that the United States had been overtly hostile towards Muslims around the world. That, of course, is nonsense. We used the power of America's military to stop invasions in Kuwait. We sided with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets. We activated NATO to prevent a genocide against the Croatian Muslims in former Yugoslavia. Friendliness towards the Muslim world does not matter to Islamicists, especially to the Islamicists who seek only the domination of a religious caliphate, who wish to rule the world and believe it is their duty and their responsibility to make it happen. Yet the Obama administration, Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama, who just happened to have grown up going to public schools in Indonesia that happened to be madrasas, a president who probably understood Islam far better than any previous president to serve, even Thomas Jefferson, who warned in the day after having read the Quran, he understood the threat. But no one has better understood Islam and the threat that it poses to freedom and to liberty than Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama, because he grew up in a Muslim household. So the Obama administration sought friendship with the Iranian government, knowing full well that no good would come of it. He essentially handed them a nuclear program and control of a vast swath of the Middle East. Lessons that we should have learned, lessons that we should remember, lessons that you can't help but think Barack Obama was well aware of, that he knew the consequences, that he knew what he was doing, and if that is indeed the case, he should be held accountable. A third lesson that really should be brought home is that immigration matters. President Donald J. Trump is right to look to immigration vetting as a serious problem in handling of the terror threat. After all 19 of the hijackers arrived on visas, either student, tourist, or business. Several of them overstayed those visas. And while Trump worries mostly about immigration via the southern border, an estimated 40% of illegal immigration occurs through legal entry and then visa overstay. It's bad enough that our porous southern border is a problem. A bigger problem is the government's utter failure to vet people entering the country generally, and then their complete unwillingness to follow up on those who overstay their visas. While the left complains about Trump's refugee stay, the fact is that the government ought to be deeply concerned about those who enter the country from Islamicist rich regions. Europe is finding that out the hard way through increased crime and terrorism, and unfortunately, their governments aren't doing anything about it either. They're doubling down on the idea. The EU has told all of its member states that they are going to have to continue to meet a quota. You have Angela Merkel swearing that the Iran deal that was worked out in 2015 is the way to deal with North Korea, which is absolutely asinine when you consider the fact that the Iranian deal was modeled after the North Korea deal that Bill Clinton made, which is directly the result of the current North Korea issue in the first place. Angela Merkel is trying to pretend like there is no problems in Germany. Chancellor Merkel doesn't seem to understand that she's giving her nation away. Or perhaps far more sinisterly, she does in fact understand and is willfully participating. Again, I can't speak to which that is, but I can tell you, it certainly seems suspicious. Every person in a Western civilization style nation, Western Europe, and the majority of the Western Hemisphere, we should all, each and every one of us, citizens of each nation, be concerned about the vetting process involved in who gets to come in and who gets to go out, who gets to go freely. Where do they go? What have they been taught when they come back? This is all important information. jihadists have went to hot spots to be trained by ISIS and then come back home. Why do you think they would be sent back home? Immigration isn't just a matter of jobs. It isn't just a matter of who's moving into your neighborhood. It is a matter of national security, and it must be treated as such. And until every citizen, regardless of political ideology or party affiliation that they claim, until each and every one of us realizes that it is serious and it is vital for the survival of the nation, then we will be at risk, and we will continue to be at risk. We will be in danger. Another lesson that we should have learned: major terrorist attacks require state sponsors. There must be a sponsor state for a major organized attack. I know some people will still argue this point. Some people believe that you don't have to have that anymore. I tend to think that's not necessarily true. I mean, it was a widely accepted truism in the aftermath of 9/11. The fact that major attacks require planning, coordination, and resources that demand a home base. That's why the Bush administration took out the Taliban and looked either, there's still some debate, some folks think wrongly so. I still argue that the legitimate target looked to Iraq, the Saddam Hussein-led government. They looked to Iraq as a sponsor of state of terrorism. They were a sponsor state of terrorism. We know they were a sponsor state of terrorism for a very long time, and we did know they had weapons of mass destruction. Sadly, the reason we knew that is because we sold them a good many of them. And there has been evidence found. Just what evidence that has been found that there were weapons of mass destruction there have been ignored and underreported and swept under the rug. Were they a serious threat to us directly? No, and probably never would have been. But they were a serious enough threat to our citizenry and our interest. They were sympathetic to Al-Qaeda. And we know they had supported other terrorist organizations in the past. Now, I really think that the whole deal with Iraq probably had more to do with the feeling of unfinished business that his father didn't have a chance to complete. Excuse me. But at the end of the day, Saddam Hussein needed to be removed simply because he never lived up to the terms of his surrender. But that's another argument for another day. We do know that Iraq was a sponsor of state terrorism. We do know that Afghanistan had become a sponsor for state, a state sponsor of terrorism under the Taliban. We knew these things to be true. Now, truthfully, we probably should have looked way more closely at Iran, too, because we knew Iran was heavily involved, especially with the organizations like Hezbollah. But that logic led the Bush administration to think that replacement of regimes with more democratic institutions would naturally bring about less terror. That was the principle. The Obama administration, in its bizarre argument in favor of the so-called Arab Spring, felt the same way, presumably. That was a problem with the implementation of the theory, however. Not that the theory itself was a problem, just the implementation. How do you bring about the changes of regime? Still, major terrorist operations do require state sponsors. That's why ISIS territorial integrity matters to its sponsorship of major terror operations overseas. They need to be able to command a certain amount of resources, and without those resources, their ability to operate becomes diminished. one last lesson that I want to touch on that we need to acknowledge. America has real enemies. And it's not just America, I'll add right here. Again, every nation that embraces freedom of speech, every nation that embraces individual liberties to its citizens, every nation that embraces the concept of democracy or constitutional republics, if you believe in a certain amount of freedom for the citizens and you do not believe that Sharia law is the law that should be imposed within your borders, then you have enemies. But the bottom line is the United States, America, has real enemies. Now, it's real tempting for the United States to look inward for threats to its citizens. We're the freest, we're the most prosperous country in human history. And as Barack Hussein al-Akbar Obama noted, Al-Qaeda was never an existential threat to us, nor is ISIS. But when it comes to threats to American citizens, the first duty of the government is to prevent those threats and stop those who would perpetrate them. Who should be unified in that effort, not divided for political reasons? We should be unified in that effort. We should not be divided over political reasons. But here we are. Many of the lessons that we did learn, even if it was just short term, on 9/11, 2001, many of those lessons have faded with time. We seem to be back where we started in a lot of ways. We're back to this strange Bill Clintonian isolationism that when it came to the world stage, we just really don't want to be leaders anymore. And although tempered by a stronger anti-terror mechanism abroad, we're still creeping towards this strange kind of isolationism. And that's why it's imperative that we once again remember what happened on 9/11 and what we must do to stop the next 9/11. Now, today isn't just the 16th anniversary of the attack on the World Trade Center. It's also the 5th anniversary of the attack on the Benghazi consulate and the Egyptian embassy. We don't often think too much about the Egyptian attack because it wasn't particularly damaging to us as a country. We didn't lose much in the way of lives. But Benghazi, we lost an ambassador, and we lost good men who ignored orders to do the right thing. We, as a government, our State Department, and our White House ignored the cries and pleads for help from men who were in direct harm's way, who faced multiple waves of attacks. And then, because there was an election cycle underway, because there was an effort for Barack Hussein al-Akbar Obama to get reelected, they decided to come up with a story, an excuse of what led to this, because they were desperately trying to hide the fact that they were involved in illegal activities, in moving guns into the hands of, air quotes here, Syrian rebels. Some of which were legitimate Syrian rebels fighting the Assad regime, and some of which were actually an offshoot of Al-Qaeda that eventually became part of ISIS. We tend to want to forget a lot about that, and we especially want to forget about that when, today of all days, you still have Hillary Rodham Clinton running around on her whining book tour trying to explain what happened. She's still whining about the fact that she didn't get her opportunity to claim the one prize that she was born and bred for her entire life. She thinks that she has a birthright to the presidency of the United States, and she has the nerve to whine about it, and she has the nerve to write a book and try to make money about it, and the whole time she ignores the fact that it does, even at this point, it still makes a difference, Hillary Clinton. What was it that caused these men to be in harm's way? It was the illegal activities that was condoned by the White House and the State Department. I don't know how much you were overruled in a lot of this stuff, but you were Secretary of State, so you were still responsible. The fact that there were military people, quick response teams that were close enough, that could have been there to help repel the second wave. There was plenty of time for them to get there, who were ordered to stand down. Gotta calm down. There are American citizens today who lost sons. Excuse me. Who lost sons, who lost daughters, who lost brothers, who lost sisters, who lost children, who lost parents. There are American citizens living in this country right now who were lied to by their government, who had their family members abandoned by this government, and also they could try to hide the fact that they were trying to overthrow Assad in Syria. And they, in true so-called progressive fashion, decided that the ends justified the means. They decided that the law was just an obstacle, as they so often do. The very fact that Hillary Clinton has not spent time inside a jail cell, has not spent time wearing chains, is an abomination. And the reason why so many Americans today have become disenfranchised, because they believe justice is an arcane thought. That the political class has finally managed to become bigger than the idea of justice. I cannot make you any promises that we will restore this republic to its former greatness. I can't make you any promises that those responsible for the deaths on September 11th, whether we're discussing 2001 or whether you're discussing 5 years ago, I can't promise you that any of these people who are responsible will ever face justice in this life. I'm reasonably certain that they will face justice in the afterlife. What small bit of comfort to the family members that may be. But what I can promise you and what I can guarantee you is that as long as there is breath in my lungs, I will do what little bit I can do to make sure that your family members did not die in vain and that they will not be forgotten. I will do everything in my power, what little it is, to make sure that the voice for freedom continues to be heard and that the calls for justice will continue to be made and that the people of the world will not be allowed to forget. They will not be allowed to forget because I will take every opportunity I have to remind them, and better yet, better still, I know a lot of other people who will join me in that cause. What occurred in 2001 was the act of Islamic terrorism. What occurred at the Benghazi consulate, full-on military action. And the worst part of Benghazi is the fact that it could have been prevented. The worst part of 2001 is that if our immigration standards had been kept up and we had been doing the follow-up on the visas, the attack on the Twin Towers could have been prevented. We have to remain vigilant. It's the price of freedom, boys and girls, and as long as there is any of you out there that still want to breathe free, then you're going to have to stand alongside me and be forever vigilant and be forever vocal. Do not back down. Do not kowtow to political correctness. And do not be afraid to speak out in the name of justice, liberty, and, well, dare I say it, the American way. But I want that for more than just America. I want that for my friends to the north in Canada. I want that for my friends across the pond in the UK. I want that for my friends throughout the world, wherever they may be. I would love to see a day where some point in time, before the end of days, that we could all breathe free. I don't expect that to happen. It's not likely to happen. But it doesn't mean I wouldn't love to see it. September 11th. Never forget. Always remember. And while we're at it, remember this too. Don't take my word for it. Definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, some time. Look up source materials. Don't just take Google's word. Don't just use Wikipedia. Find source documents. Find everything you can. Yes, I'm sorry. It means you're going to have to work, and it also means you're going to have to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. This is not goodbye, but it is goodbye for now. I will see you guys Wednesday night. Thanks for listening. Love you guys. Freedom.
Heartbreak.